are listening to NeuroDivergent X.
Hope you like it weird.
What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, can't complain, except, you know, I've had 2 months off work and now I gotta get back to the grind. So, you know, I was in denial for a few days, but I've accepted my fate and as being a contributing member of society once again.
Okay, and do you feel like you're contributing?
Fuck no. Not yet. Maybe
next week. I don't know how you do it because, like, I've had 2 weeks off and I'm dreading going back to work. And so I don't know, after 2 months off.
Yeah. It's just enough time to kind of like forget what you're doing, you know, forget how to do your job and then you gotta go back and relearn it again. So it's always, there's always that little extra anxiety for you. If you don't have enough in your life.
Exactly. And it's funny you say anxiety, because that's kind of our topic of today's episode. We're going to talk about the effects of anxiety.
Wow, what a fucking segue. I didn't even plan that.
I know. That's how good you are.
I'm not good. Well, we are we're going to broach the ever popular topic of anxiety. Impacts, you know, just about everyone at some level. You know, and there's some other people that impacts them a whole lot and really affects their lives, you know, and their ability to function day to day. So, yeah, we're going to talk about a whole range of subtopics under that umbrella term of anxiety and kind of give you an idea about some of the things we've had to struggle with. Both myself and Raz have dealt with this most of our adult lives. I feel like, as a kid, I didn't have a name for it, but I probably was impacted by it even back then.
The thing is, as a kid, you can kind of just push it back to, you know, worrying or fear or, like, a lot of kids obsessive, right? Because I think we both know about obsessive compulsive, you know, behavior in our own childhood. We had, and compulsion, right? I think that all kind of ties.
Yeah, it's interesting as an adult knowing the term obsessive compulsive disorder, because that was definitely how my anxiety as a kid, how my anxiety manifested, because I had these weird, crazy little habits that I had to do, you know, otherwise I really thought something bad would happen if I didn't. You know, I'd have to line things up just so. I was washing my hands until they were raw. And
so now, as an adult, because of that, you know, compulsion, right, because that's the repetitive behavior you're doing to reduce anxiety. Probably as a kid, you probably wouldn't categorize it that you thought of it as that you were having anxiety if you didn't wash your hands a certain amount of time or way or tie your shoelaces. And it's pretty fun. Like, I used to remember we'd go rollerblading and it would take forever for us to go rollerblading because each blade or each one you put on each foot had to be exactly the same. And you would stop countless times and tie, make sure they matched. It was crazy.
It was, yeah. It was, man. It's a real pain in the ass. I mean, I'm sure it was annoying for you, but it was also annoying for me to live like that.
You know, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe as a kid, I probably came off more annoying, but I think now as a middle-aged adult, it's not so much I understand it, because I have, in my own way, repetitive things that I did that I'm sure that you really noticed that probably was annoying to you.
I think a good way to kind of start the conversation around anxiety, like, I think both of us kind of, like, when did you first, would you first say that you developed, like, a real anxiety, like, general anxiety? Like, when, you know, how old were you and, like, kind of how did that start and manifest?
I think I've always been a worrier and an obsessive thinker anyway. So I think, like, from as long as I can remember, I've had those kind of those key variables or those traits. I have to say this, and I probably would never tell her, but I think my mom was a contributing factor to my anxiety, just like how she is, because she's afraid of everything. She's like always questioning everything. So I have that type of her personality traits.
I feel like we both grew up with with a mom like that, right? Because
yeah, you too.
My mom, you tell her any kind of news, immediately what she looks for is like the things that could go wrong,
right?
Or like the negatives of it, right? Things that I could possibly worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Where things really started to manifest, where I kind of realized I had kind of a issue in anxiety, it probably started like we went to BC, and this might be all the way back to 2000. We drove there and everything was fine when we went to BC to go visit some relatives. But Jerry, there, you know how you go on trips, you eat shitty. So I had like stomach issues when I was there for whatever reason. And I think even before that, I had an obsession about peeing. So I would obsess, I have to pee all the time. And I obsess, well, if I do something, I got to pee. And then I got over that. But then I turned into an obsession of shitting. And so when we were driving back from BC,
to this day,
I still do. But like, I got this head that I thought I had to shit the whole time. And I had this anxiety and this panic about this obsessive worrying about it, where like the family had to stop. So while we were driving on the road, I had anxiety about that I had to shit. And for whatever reason, I just, the whole way home from BC all the way back to where we are in Saskatchewan, I obsessed about it. It was like, but I got over it. Once we got back to town, you know,
I have a question about that. So was it a thought that was in your head? Like, what if I have to shit in him in the car? Or was it?
Yeah, it kind of
like a physical indication that you needed to shit.
Well, I thought they were physical indications because then we had to stop. So then I'd go to the bathroom, but I couldn't shit. But then as soon as I got back into the vehicle, then everything started manifesting, the physical symptoms, the panic, and it just kind of manifested through the whole trip. Probably like really that's the, I'd say when it was conducive of those, like I always obsessed about things, but the older I got and for whatever reason, because your body, like your physiology feels changed. And you know, this when a person, you start sweating, sweaty palms, you're uncomfortable. You feel like, you know, with anxiety, you feel like you're losing control. And I think that was the where it stemmed from, a thought of losing control.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's the first one.
That revolved around shitting.
It is. Like, and it's funny now, I don't have those issues. I think everybody, if they have like a kind of a stomach, upset stomach, where every now and again you eat something that doesn't agree with you and you're in a vehicle, you kind of panic because you're like, ooh, because a lot of times most people, you can hold it until you need to go. But sometimes there's those times where it's playing peekaboo on you. And of course, I mean, panic sets in. I think everyone has those issues one time or another. But this was just way unrealistic when we were traveling. And then, of course, I think that kind of stems to like traveling because not control of the vehicle, not control of things. So I think there's a bunch of stuff kind of mixed in there that really led to me developing a, you know, anxiety disorder, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because you get kind of, I think everyone does to some degree, and I do, I know, but when it comes to traveling, like you get a little anxious, right? If you're, you know, mm-hmm. you're going on a trip, even hopping in the vehicle, right? But you would rather be driving, right? Like feel kind of like you're in control of the trip.
Not so much. I sometimes, if I'm really worth, I rather someone else drive. Sometimes driving, yeah, actually, I could probably like if I drive, especially if I someone I feel comfortable with, like say probably with you or my brother, I feel more comfortable. Because I can't be around too many people when I, back in the day or even now if I'm really uncomfortable. But as people I'm comfortable around, you know, if they drove, I'd be cool. I drive a lot now, and that's so I still deal with it. But to go back to, I don't know if you want to kind of talk about like your kind of foundations of your anxiety, where I could go a little bit more that really developed me into anxiety, because I feel like it's like a 3-step process with me. You know, it was.
I mean, you started, man. Maybe continue because okay. I don't want to ruin the flow from where you know.
Yeah. So. It manifested into like 3 physiological things I look at. The one was with peeing, and then it manifested to shit. And then it kind of manifested to worrying about my health and more specifically my heart. And for whatever reason, I don't know if when it was, but it wasn't too long after the BC incident. I got into obviously weightlifting and with Big Kahuna, I did, you know, a bunch of supplements and I would do Tribulus. I would do all that stuff. We were hanging out one night and he lived out of town. I just got this anxiety that there was something wrong. I felt so like angsty and stuff, and it all became, and then I had this knot in my stomach and all this, and I'm thinking I'm having a heart attack. So I had like a panic attack, you know, my first experience of a real major panic attack, and I thought it was something wrong with my heart. And
what did you go to the hospital or anything?
Well, no, I left the buddy's place, Kahuna's, went home, and I actually went for a jog. I went for a jog
because I'm having a heart attack. I should probably throw on the old sneakers and go for her.
Yeah.
No, I'm just bugging you.
Yeah, no, it's mad. But I think that's the point of anxiety and where it leads to, that I needed to do something to like convince myself, and sitting at home or not and by myself, I was like losing it. So I went for a jog and that kind of helped me. But then I started waking up and I had this knot and this tight feeling in my chest. And then I eventually would go see and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So I was all fucked up. So eventually I made an appointment with the doctor and ECG, all that, everything's good. Blood pressure, everything's fine. All right. You know, and a lot of people need this, as you see a lot of people, they just need to go get like a doctor's or some type of reassurance from either a medical profession. So I got that. So I was fine for a while.
Peace of mind, right?
But then it started creeping back in there. The irony of it is, what didn't help was, is that like your wife, I have arrhythmia. So I get regular heartbeats, and I also, you know, have SVT, supraventricular tachycardia. Having that happen, I get that out of nowhere. And I didn't know the definitions. I didn't know really what anxiety was, all the definitions of stuff. I didn't know about all these conditions. So I thought I was dying.
Can I ask a quick question? When did you first start having those irregular heartbeats?
I really noticed them around 2001.
And this is after your first panic attack?
Yeah, after all my panic and stuff and, you know, being in phenomenal shape, I would get it. Like, we'd be out at the club. There's a story, Big Kahuna and I had two girls and we were doing kind of a double date thing. And probably what induced it probably was food that I ate that night. Now, in hindsight, it was probably gastro-induced, but I went into SVT mode and I started panicking because you're like, your heart going into like SVT mode, you know, you think, oh, something's wrong, I'm going to die. But logic and medical professions telling you, no, you're fine. It's, you know, so, okay, I get out of it. And then so I went and I got so bad that traveling, like you said, was tough. I couldn't travel, you know, I couldn't travel to, you know, an hour away because there was no medical clinic or hospital. I needed a safety net because, like, you know, the stories, I would drive a lot of nights just to go sit out by the hospital. And I was fortunate at that time I was working in the hospital. So I got so bad with the anxiety and all that stuff. The only place I could go to is work and home. I couldn't even go next door to the grocery store without having a panic attack. I couldn't do it. And the thing is,
I didn't realize it was that severe, man. Just about, you know, if there wasn't like the going to work thing.
Yeah.
And it probably was just because you worked at a hospital. Maybe the job you have now, like it would.
I'd have to quit. Like I would have quit.
Borderline agoraphobia, right?
Yep. Panic disorder, obsessive thinking, like you had it there. And then I would say hypochondria, because there was weird thoughts going in your head because like you know, that's an unfortunate thing in the medical field. When you go get a checkup and everything is fine, but you don't feel fine, you almost feel like you're losing your mind because you're like, well, I should be fine. Why am I not fine?
I've been there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
World got so small. And that's when I realized I had to do something about it. And I went and seeked therapy for that. And that helped. But it's been a lifetime thing kind of working around.
I just want to comment about, I remember, I didn't know things got that bad for you. I think when I noticed things were really bad for you was later on when we were both living away from our hometown. I'm just thinking where I was living. That's kind of when I just started my career, when I was living down there by Emerge at the, just across the street from Emerge at City Hospital. I remember coming home. I don't remember the particulars of where I was coming from, if I was walking up to my place or just got out of my car or whatever. But like, I heard you call my name, your DB. I'm like, what? I was like, where's that coming from? And I look over and there's Raz. And I think you had your bike.
Yeah.
You were over by Emerge and you're just like, and I was like, hey, what's up, mate? Did you come to visit me? And you're like, no, I was feeling a little, I don't know if it's panicky or my heart was doing stuff.
I was in SVT mode.
I just come over and I was like, oh. And you just kind of said it so matter of factly. And I talked to you for a bit and you said you were just going to hang out. And I was like, okay, I'll be over there. You know, like I'm just, or maybe I was leaving.
Yeah, you're leaving your place somewhere.
And that might have been what, like, okay, man, well, you know, like, let me know how things go. But what I took away from that, like, and I left and it was like, say most people, typical person, they're going to Emerge and it's like, it's a unusual day for them, you know, and it's like, there's got to be something out of the ordinary going on. But it just kind of really struck me, you know, like Raz is over at Emerge and it's kind of like, it's just a regular day for him. And that's what I took away from it. I was like, you know, he's been dealing with this so long. This is just part of his life. And I really felt for you, man. You know, like,
yeah, I appreciate that.
But it was that was just the weird thing. It's like he's at Emerge and he's just talking to me like, yeah, you know, I'm hanging out at Emerge, man. You know, like it was just,
yeah.
Totally regular thing, part of your life. Yeah, that's rough, man.
Well, dude, there's another story. I used to do spin class at the gym there at the university I went to. I went into SVT mode when I was doing it. And it was so crazy because we had the instructor who was like, there was no sympathy with this person. She's like, if you're not moving, you should get out of class. So now I'm in SVT mode. So my heart is just, do-do-do-do-do. So I'm panicking, but I'm like, my pride, and I you know, didn't want to lose control. So I like kind of slowed down and I like stand up and I'd be like, you know, because I'm like, because when you live with that, because your wife, your wife would understand this. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try to go as long as I can and see if I can regulate. So luckily, it regulated and I could continue the spin class. But that was my last day at spin class because then I couldn't do it because I'm like, because I'd be at the gym a lot of times. I'd do like legs and I would go in SVT mode. And I'd walk to the hospital because the hospital was kind of connected, but it's still a long walk from the gym that we were there to the hospital. But I'd be, you know, and I'd be panicking. Of course, your heart's, you know, you feel like you're going to drop, but I would make it to the hospital and then I would just hang out there until I regulated and I go beyond my day.
That's awful. And it sucks when it prevents you from doing things like exercise, doing things you enjoy. Like you probably loved spin class and then.
I did.
You know, and it was good for you, right?
It was. I used to run. I used to jog all the time. Those are things I don't really do anymore because even like on the medication that I'm on, because I'm on beta blockers, I rarely go into SVT mode. But like if I like really get my heart elevated, I get irregular heartbeats. So I just kind of, I jack up my heart rate to a certain thing, then I bring it down, then I jack it up. And so the way for me to get around working out and still be intense is that it's kind of like a marathon. Cause I'm not like your wife where your wife would go into, but it wouldn't really, I admire your wife because like she has it worse than I do, but she wouldn't let it stop her. Like to work out, to go do stuff, to go travel, or me, I didn't like traveling. Like it was hard for traveling. Like I still have, you know, my routines that I still kind of do.
And she would also go into it out of the blue too. We were sitting, like I told you about that time, we were just sitting down for dinner there in Toronto and on a nice patio there. And all of a sudden she's like, I'm an SVT. So like, and the way she would get out of it, like she could try bearing down, but typically she'd have to invert herself. So we had to find a place in the restaurant that I could pick her up by her ankles. You don't want to fucking be doing that all the time either.
No. And then when you're by yourself, they get... The panic with me, because of the panic and the anxiety, it would set in so that unrealistic thinking, the worst case scenario is that you're going to drop and die, which is kind of funny because, you know, those thoughts still creep in, but I'm like, well, I'm still here. And thing is, we're kind of at that age now that, you know, I could die. Like, we're at that age category where nothing's guaranteed, which is kind of funny, you know, but all those years, because it's been like 20 some years living with, you know, anxiety, panic, and all that. There's so much more I could talk about, but let's kind of jump into you, like the foundations of what really got you, like, because you still, like myself, you still deal with overcoming anxiety and all that.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I also want to add, it's just a bad combination for you to have a finicky heart like that and then be a person who's predisposed to anxiety and health anxiety. Like, that's just a fucking nightmare.
Oh, yeah. My family's, you know, I have to give them a lot of credit. They probably have to put up with me, you know, because the amount of times that I know in the early days, my parents take me to the hospital, or even my brother. My brother was, you know, has had to deal with me the most. Yeah. So I'm in debt for the guy. Okay. Well, now that we have talked about my fucked up issues here, let's get into your manifestation into anxiety and all that madness.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of mentioned as a kid, I did have obsessive compulsive disorder, did weird little things. So obviously always been predisposed to anxiety. And I think when as a kid, it was a lot, there's a lot of factors playing into it. You know, I think definitely parenting issues. I had an overly critical dad and had a mom who was anxious and worried about everything and made me worry about everything. So I think that kind of manifested as a result of that. And also just, I struggled with things like attention, and now I realize that. So, you know, things are hard. Paying attention, listening, you know, and you get in trouble as a kid if you don't listen and do what you're told and behave at school.
Well, let's be honest. We come from a generation where our parents did a lot of fear mongering to us to like do things, to comply to things, or just even with like the block parent thing and children being abducted, there was like my mom like instilled that fear into me that I could be abducted. And I mean, that shit happens, but you know, they kind of programmed us in a way.
No one wanted you though.
No, it's true.
But I think as far as like, you know, growing up and it turning into more of like a generalized anxiety disorder and panic attacks, I can pinpoint it to kind of a situation like you had where my first panic attack, and that kind of opened the floodgates for a lifetime struggle with anxiety. But I was, I was 16, and I was, I went to a movie with some friend. I think it was back in that I probably had just turned six. I didn't have my license or anything because I did not. Someone's, I don't know if it was my mom or someone's parent drove us. So anyhow, I remember the movie. We went to go see Seven, which is a pretty, you know, creepy, scary show for...
Yeah, you're not going to have no anxiety
16-year-old. Yeah. So you kind of leave the theater feeling kind of weird anyhow, right? So yeah, I remember I came home and I was just laying on the couch in the living room just watching TV, I think. And then out of nowhere, I just felt something in my chest pop. Like I could hear it and I felt it like something physically moved. And it was just so unexpected and I didn't know what it was. And then I immediately thought like it was something to do with my heart. And then I started, you know, those weird physical symptoms that you've never had before where, you know, you feel like things change like visually, you know, like things, I don't know, it feels like your vision gets like dim or, and then I started shaking, like my full body shaking, and we were calling my mom in and being like, told her what had happened, and I couldn't even talk, and I kept shaking, and I was just like, I thought I was gonna die. And she went and woke my dad up, and he was just kind of like, they didn't know what was wrong, but they were like, I seemed to be okay, so we just kind of whatever. But I was afraid to go to sleep that whole night. I just thought I was gonna die. And then yeah, I did end up going to the doctor, and what did they say? They said it might have just been like a rib kind of out of place with like some hardened cartilage, and it might have just kind of caught and popped into place again or something. But my heart seemed to be fine or whatever. But man, that just, like I said, that just opened the floodgates. You know, I would get from then on, like that was an especially tough year. And I was afraid to exercise and do stuff because I was worried about my heart and worried about dying.
You talking about being afraid to sleep, that was when I was at the height of my kind of closure and my bubble with my anxiety, I would not sleep.
because I hated night, because I was worried about that I wasn't going to wake up. And that, like you said, opens the floodgates. Stuff like that that has never manifested or has never been an issue in your life before, all of a sudden, you know, going to bed becomes like almost like your torturer. Because, you know, a lot of times people look forward to going to sleep or, you know, relaxing and refreshing for the next day, where I dreaded nighttime and going to sleep at that time.
Yeah, me too, man. But nighttime's always, even since I was a little kid, it's always been an anxious time for me, because I'd never, I'd have trouble getting to sleep. And I also find now, even just in the evenings in general, that is my anxious time, you know. So, yeah, I don't know, like here and there, and I would go through bouts of anxiety as far as like panic attacks and that. But I did kind of keep it under control, I'd say, until, you know, once I got into my 20s, I did kind of get it under control. But I, as an adult, I think it was ever, I kind of had a resurgence of it after my last kind of health scare, my surgery there. When I had that mass in my chest. I've had a few health issues, you know, I've had run-ins with cancer, and they're all things that kind of, they jar you and change you and make you pretty aware that, you know, bad things can actually happen, which is not good for someone who thinks like you and me, right? I did notice, and it was actually our pal there, Dr. Science. So after my surgery, where they took that mass and it was stuck on my heart. And he asked, you know, because he said a lot of people who have surgery with their heart or have open heart surgery, whatever, it affects them after, like they'll go through a period of like depression or anxiety. And that I definitely did. Like I was really anxious after that, and actually did start a med, because like I found myself, I went to work after that, and sometimes I would start panicking and like almost pass out. I was like, fuck, I gotta go to a doctor and get this sorted out. Yeah. So, and I think kind of had a handle, but I definitely since then, I've been more anxious and probably had more health anxiety. Then my wife has definitely noticed that. She's like, there's a change in you then, where you've started to be overly, I guess you'd say almost like a hypochondriac about things, hey? Yeah. And so, and it's only in last how many years it's been, but I have had more panic attacks, and what was a couple were definitely, weed gummy induced. Yeah, but I had a really bad, I mean, obviously there was that one experience I had with you where we just took too much and I was fucked. But
that's one thing about the anxiety, like for you, maybe it's not so much funny, but the way I look at it, it is kind of a funny situation, because typically it's you and I.
It was us being just stupid. Really?
DB and I, because we're health conscious and all that, we're not really substance kind of inducing guys. Like we don't drink. And also, we didn't drink that much as it was. And we didn't do a lot of pot smoking or edibles, nothing like that. And I've never done really an edible until that time. And the friend that our supplier... You and I were talking about, let's do an edible. And we're like, are you sure you're okay? And you and I both, because of our histories and, you know, and then even I think your wife's like, are you sure you guys want to do that? And we're like, oh, yeah.
And I was also very hungover, and I had taken a bunch of CBD that morning, which interacts with fucking, I've heard once you've taken CBD and then you take the THC, it can amplify its effects. So,
but the supplier.
Brilliant.
Told us that when you do this for your first time, you know, just make sure you eat, you're hydrated, and start with maybe the half dose, wait an hour or whatever, and before you even think about taking the other half. But here we are, you know, hungover, dehydrated, and it probably didn't help. Like you said, you took CBD. We like decided to take it. So we take half of it, and then we're sitting there and we put it on a timer, and we're like, after an hour, hey, are you feeling anything? No, let's take the other half. So we take the other half. And then not too long after, it kind of like, you're like, I'm fucked up. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm fucked.
You're on a spiral. Yeah, man. I was obliterated. I couldn't even function. I spent the rest of the night laying on a bed. And like, my wife might have came and I know our go-to now is cat videos.
Okay.
If I'm having a panic attack, she can settle me down with some cat videos. So there's probably a lot of that involved.
I found it funny from my perspective, because when you left to go upstairs and get away, just I started panicking and I went to the bathroom because I got up and walking and I'm like, I am fucked. And my heart, like my chest starts getting, because I'm like, okay, DB is losing his mind. I can't lose my mind either, because your poor wife, eh? Because your wife was supposed to work.
Oh.
But you and I, two pieces of shit, because we're all fucked. So she babysat not only you, but me. And like, she'd check up on me. So she put on like comedy specials on Netflix. And it's like, okay, Raz, you sit here. Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah. Okay. If you need anything, be a good little boy. You know, so then she'd go tend to me. And I went through like, I think like an hour or so panicking, and then I'm okay. Panicking and okay. It was good.
I was like, dude, I was so messed up. I was like seeing fractal patterns. Like when I closed my eyes, like I was tripping. So I'd say one of the worst attacks I had, and it was a gummy induced. No, it wasn't like gummy. It was at chocolate. Because I actually had a really good experience on edibles with this chocolate bar when I was in, we were visiting our friends in another city, and it was just a beautiful winter day, and they had this like huge like kind of festival, and we went out skating on this lake, just pristine ice. I don't know if they had zambonied the whole thing or flooded it. It was amazing. And I was high. It was awesome. But so the next time I tried that, we were up at our friend's cabin, and we had taken some. Maybe this first night I was there, and I didn't really feel anything. And then I tried it the next night. Like, I kind of thought it was like a weak batch, like this chocolate. Yeah, it didn't kick in. And we had a couple drinks or whatever, but like, it didn't really kick in. We're sitting there for a while. And like, I went to bed, and I took like a quarter sleeping pill, because I was just whatever. I wasn't really drinking or anything at night, and I wanted to sleep. But that combination, because these, I don't know what it was about these edibles, but they peaked really late. My wife noticed the same thing. She said, like, when she woke up, she felt messed up. But I got up and I was on my way to the bathroom, and I just got super dizzy and my vision was fucked up. And then I went back to the room and I thought it was like that combination. I was like, I fucking overdosed and I'm dying. Like, I was convinced I was fell on the floor. Oh, again, she had to work me through that whole night, and it was awful. It was just, yeah, man. So that's actually the experience that sparked me writing that song outside. It's about having a panic attack, and the title comes from feeling you're kind of like out of your body. You know, you feel like you're floating and you're not in control. That's where the title comes from.
When you're in it, you feel like it's an outer body experience. You don't feel like, everything seems dreamy to you, blurry.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel realistic. You feel like very tired and dopey. And like, it's like you feel like a zombie until you kind of take matters in your own hands to kind of find things to kind of help pull you out of it. Right.
Totally. Yeah. And I've had a couple like minor panic attacks through just this last year. And it's more been because I've got really, really sick. And I also think it's also the post-COVID anxiety, because you hear of so many people who've had to go to the hospital, been put on ventilators, and me being asthmatic, I had just this wicked chest cold, and like I would cough and couldn't stop coughing and was coughing up shit and just could not catch my breath. And then I had that nasty sinus ear infection where my eardrum perforated and shit was just pouring out of it. And like, it was just, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd had panics again, and it was... Fuck, dude. Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah, that's kind of the rundown of, you know, as far as panic and health anxiety is gone.
I think a lot of people, anyone that's listening to this, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have similar experiences and different experiences. And we're kind of talking that it sounds like a dour thing. But on the upside, I would say going through these experiences has also made me a different, and in a lot of ways, a better person. For one, really appreciate life, appreciate the people that are around me, you know, and also it makes you a more cautious person, and not just obviously going out in the real world, but it makes you more cautious even just dealing with people, say relationships, job wise. So having these experiences in a lot of ways, I see a lot of beneficial things that have come out of it, you know, in the back end. At the time, obviously not, but on the other hand, deep diving and researching. And like one thing I know is that it takes many years to kind of go through this, and it's a learned behavior, right? Like in a way, anxiety, panic disorder, you programmed your brain to think this way. So now you and I have talked about this. We've had to, both you and I, in our own ways, go a route to try to kind of recalibrate our brains. And I would tell anybody that has went through anxiety, panic disorder, or a hypochondriac, or any of that stuff, is you got to be patient with yourself and kind of accept that this is me, who I am. This is how I am today. I just got to keep working at it, keep chipping away. And then that is what has really got me through it, where like today, it's been a long time since I've taken a trip to the ER just for like safety measures. And like I live now quite a ways away from, I don't have the, like when you saw me at the ER there with my bike, I live right across the street from a hospital, like where I was living, and I'd make so many trips there. So moving away, I have not had that. Don't get me wrong. Like I still have those panic moments, and I carry around that cardia thing for irregular heartbeats, right? And that is kind of my safety net.
That's something to celebrate, you know, like,
yeah,
it might sound like that's a minor thing, but like that's, you've got to celebrate things like that, because that's probably improved your quality of life.
It has. Like, I think I'm both of us at a better place. Yeah, you know, there's some things that I obsess with now that I never did back then. But in a lot of ways, I believe you and I are more functioning. So to say to anyone out there that's listening to this, that don't give up on yourself, because I think that's the big thing is that accept that this is maybe your life, and this is something you might have to kind of work around for the rest of your life. And that's okay. That's not a bad thing. You know, this is who you are. That's the thing about life, is that life shoots us all different bullets at us, and some of them hit, some of them we dodge. And we're going to continue to keep dodging, and we might get a little, you know, hit here or there, in which you just got to get up, kind of work at it every day. Because I think when it comes to mental health or any of all this, people tentatively don't worry about it until things are bad. But where you and I could probably contest is that, no, even when you're doing good, it's good to have little checkups and continue, you know, what you've been doing.
See, so the thing about health anxiety is I think that it makes you conscientious about, you know, what you're putting in your body and making sure that you're active enough, you know, like, because I will say, man, like I know you say I've lived through some real actual health mini crisis or whatever, you know, but the feeling when you're in a panic attack, it's literally believing that you are dying, you know, like that's, you can't downplay that. Yeah, maybe it's not real, like you're not actually in danger of dying, but you can't tell your brain that, and you're living it. Like that's your experience. It changes you, right? You know, it is. It feels like a fucking near-death experience every time.
And sometimes a way to get out of it is actually embracing, because I've had a lot of times I'd be driving home from work when I lived at my old place there right by the hospital. I'd have these full-out panic attacks, and my heart is beating super hard, and I'm like, and it's getting tight in my chest. And I'm like, well, this is it. I'm dying. And sometimes accepting the inevitable, you survive the panic attack. And then it sometimes that can strengthen you if you're in a place where you're losing it. But then you kind of weather the storm. That can actually strengthen you for the next storm. You know, you're like, okay, now I have an umbrella. I bring an umbrella with me or something. So there's some things that can come out of that too. You know, especially when you're kind of going through like the hardest, like, and if anyone has went to therapy or listens to like even podcasts about, there's a guy, I'm going to shout him out. He's the anxiety guy, and he kind of focuses a lot on health anxiety. He says, like, just, you know, treat it like Daffy Duck, you know, oh, well, I got irregular heartbeats, or I'm having a panic attack. Hey, Daffy Duck, is that Daffy Duck? Here he is. You know, now that sounds really trivial and juvenile, but in a way, sometimes when you don't take it as serious, it lessens it. And it's like, okay, it's just there. It creeps in. And I know this because a lot of times things creep in with me. And a lot of times I just use like a little bit of that. Okay, here it is. All right, I'm uncomfortable. It's okay. You'll be okay. You're still alive. You know, you should have been dead 20 years ago. So keep going.
I don't know, because sometimes reality check snaps you back in, and sometimes when you bartered yourself, you're like, because my brother always says, he's like, well, if you do die, then you don't have to worry about it anymore, so what's the point of worry?
Yeah, I do. That is true. Although it's like the uncertainty of death, that's another thing that freaks me out.
Yes. And you know what's even crazy, because speaking of death, it's funny, for a person that kind of fears that too, to some degree, I worked a job where I was around death a lot. Mm. The job was dealing with death. And it's kind of weird that for someone who had this massive fear, also was in the heart of something that, you know, I was really afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's crazy. You know,
you think that, did that help you at all, do you think?
For the most part, I think it has helped.
There's another area of anxiety, if you don't mind me switching gears a little bit, that we might talking about, and that's social anxiety. And this is something I think, you know, everyone feels to a degree, but I feel like, as you had mentioned before, you know, as a person who doesn't drink or really do any kind of substances anymore, I've really noticed how anxious I can get going out, and like how it's really different socializing. And I'm definitely like, I'm quieter now, you know. I don't know, it's a different world, right? When you're the guy who's not, you're not drinking, things just aren't as fun and as exciting as it is for those people who are slamming back drinks, right? I don't know, like, I guess I'm just kind of like getting to know myself a little better through quitting drinking. And I didn't realize how much I depended on it to be social. Cause I find like now, I also feel like I'm just kind of like living a little more authentically. Like I realize the things I enjoy doing don't always necessarily involve being around a lot of people. But when I'm in the mood and I want to go out and do something and see people and socialize or celebrate, like I go for it, right? And I still have a good time, even though I don't drink anymore. But I'm just really kind of realizing, yeah, I think alcohol was like definitely a bigger social lubricant for me than I ever realized it was.
Yeah, I think anyone that says that it's not, it is. Like, it, you know, when you're having a few drinks in you, and especially when all the other people are, you know, it's like you're in unison with one another. You're drinking, having a good time. Your inhibitions are down because you care less. That's the one thing about going into social events now, being sober, those kind of, you know, neuroticisms that a person has, you don't necessarily have them when you have some drinks in you. In a way, your inhibition is down.
Exactly. And I've noticed it's like my filter, you know, like, cause I'll have more of a filter when I'm sober, right? So like I don't say as much, which may be a good thing at sometimes. I mean, I often say things that are like off the cuff, inappropriate, but funny, right? But like I feel like I hold back more when I'm sober, because like it just doesn't, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't want to say that in case I offend someone, or, you know, like, so I end up being a little quieter rather than fun, funny DB, you know, which I'd like, and that's what I really enjoy, is like being humorous, making people laugh, right? You know, that's something I really get a kick out of, kind of pride myself on. But it's I struggle now that.
And sometimes it doesn't help it is when you're around like a set of people that are drinking and you're not drinking. People are pretty good for the most part, but a lot of people, they almost inadvertently make a person uncomfortable. Because I've been in places where they're like, how come you're not having drinks and stuff? Well, why you're not having drinks? And then it's like, they're almost like, I don't know if they're offended, but they almost make it like awkward between you, because they're like, well, dude, just let me be. Like yourself, I don't really like attention. I really don't. Like, because I think that's part of the being anxiety and worrying and stuff. When I didn't like speaking around people. And then obviously having impaired memory issues and all that, you know, and reading and speaking comprehension problems, I still have a little bit of anxiety because I think I'm very analytical, especially obviously in my head. And I think I worry I don't always convey it like verbally. And so I like when I so when I was drinking, I didn't care about that stuff. I would just say whatever and all that. But my job and getting involved with stuff and then even doing this podcasting, I find that has actually helped with a little bit of that social anxiety because we're speaking more. Because you think about it, podcasts, no one can see us, our faces, and you don't really know us, but people are listening to what we're talking about. People are going to be probably like, oh boy, look, listen to these idiots. And then some people are like, you know what? Those guys actually make sense and I can relate to them because, you know, we're just regular schmoes here talking. Like we're just having a conversation about anxiety here. And I think a lot of people are going through the stuff and have went through the stuff like we have went through, you know. That's why it's okay, like, to feel awkward. And to feel like, I think it's natural in a social setting because I think we all want to like be accepted, right? In a way. And, you know, you want people to think you're pretty cool. Like, you know, we talked about it, that you hope people, their vibe from you is their takeaways. Like, boy, that DB is a pretty cool guy, or Raz, he is. And then when you're not drinking, there's a little bit of that. You're like, because you're less likely to social or partake, you're more reserved. The feel is like, am I coming off as, you know, fun and loving? Is like, I think I can be, because you have to kind of alter your kind of your behavior and your tact.
Or you want to come off as like boring. Maybe that's one of my fears. It's always just like, I like to, you know, make a good impression and like seem like a fun, exciting type person, you know? I don't know what it is. And I want people to come away with that after meeting me or visiting with me.
So you say some pretty funny things. Some of your best lines are when someone else is in the room and says something stupid, and you might be the only guy that catches the retardedness. You'd be like, did he really say that? Like you pointed out, that's where your humor really is at its fullest, trying to kind of deviate around and have fun, right? It's a little bit harder. But again, it's a challenge, and it's a welcome challenge, the way I look at it.
I also found alcohol would, like, I could get a little more dialed into people, and because I think it kind of settled me, and I wasn't like so all over the place. And it's interesting, like starting a stimulant med, like an ADHD med. It's funny that it kind of does the same thing. Like I don't know what it is. There's also a little more confidence, but it's easier to, you know, have social interactions and like make eye contact and really dial in and have a meaningful interaction with someone, and also like follow what they're saying. Cause like that was another problem for me socially. I'm like watching someone talk, they're talking. And then you just realize you're like, I haven't listened to anything they said, but I'm like nodding. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, man.
All right.
I found like why I don't like clubs or bars too much is cause like, and it could be the ADHD, but like I can't follow along or really like I'm distracted. You know, so like even trying to...
That's one thing I got to say. You have a hard time functioning socially. Like if there's too much going on, too much noise, too many people, I know you kind of shut down. And I really understand why now. It's just like, it's too hard to... There's too much going on. There's too much stimulus. There's too much noise. It's hard to gather your thoughts. It's hard to hear people, right? There's a lot working against you there.
I think I've gotten better where I don't shut down where people worry about me, but... it's always been a struggle. So like I'm better like on a smaller group and one-on-one where I get comfortable, but like in a really group setting. But you know what helped us? Now this has nothing to do with drinking, but we come from a town, a little more uptight town where we grew up, you and I. It's a tough town. It's a little rough. But when we both came to the city where we came for university, what really helped getting us out of our shell to a certain degree were Dr. Science's buddies.
What was the house full of basically some of our friends? They all live together.
And you got to know them. And then through you, I got to know them. And I think we were a little more kind of uptight into a certain degree. And you go hang with them.
More than...
Yeah, reserved. And you hang out with them, there's no such thing as reserve. It's like balls to the wall, acting idiots, dancing on the speakers, guys singing. It's just great time. And they were great individuals to be around because like I remember you would tell me and you'd hang and then I'd hang with you and I'd see how goofy and idiotic you'd be. But I was still kind of like reserved. But then you just can't help but like get unreserved with those pieces of shit.
Yeah, it's infectious. Like their energy and their total lack of And then you kind of you take that and care. Like I feel like I don't really keep in touch with it anymore. But it was they were an important group of friends for that period because I do feel like I came away with some really positive.
Positive life experience in a social way of acceptance, accepting everybody, hanging around them made me a more accepting person, more open to being silly, more open to letting other people be silly with me.
That's really true, man. Because I feel like you could go there, do whatever, and not be judged. Like, they'll make fun of you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they'll bust your balls, but they always make you feel welcome. You know, like you knew it was a safe place to just be an idiot, right?
Oh, man. They were really smart guys, too, like Dr. Science and the Hufflepuffs. I'd like to tell the story because it really, in a way, to me, sums them up where the older brother, we're talking, I was at his place, and he's high as a kite. Drunk and his usual, we got to go out. We're going to the bar. And he's like, okay, I'm going to have 3 more drinks. I'm going to have a shower and then we're going to go. But anyways, he's sitting there. There's this him, myself, and I think a couple other guys. And we're just sitting on there and he's getting all blasted. And he's like, you know, I think my brother and, you know, I know they're into women, but I think they're into each other. And DB and my brother are into each other. And I'm like, well, how's that possible? Like, where are you getting this from? Okay, I was at a party. and he's token up the whole time. And he's telling me how you guys were kissing. And I'm like, that's bullshit. Because I've been around you my whole life. He's like, I got a video. So he's got this video at this party that we're all at. And we're walking in the door. And he's sitting there. And he's token on this big joint. And he's like, see, they're coming. I'm like, where is it? And you guys came in there. And actually, you guys just kind of hugged each other and kind of feigned a little bit. He goes, right there, they're gay. It's like, no.
He showed me the same video. and it was really far away. We just like walked in, met us at the door. And probably what happened was like he hugged me and then like pretended.
Something. And I'm trying to ask, dude, like, okay, so what's your main goal here? Like, you think your brother and DB are gay? He's like, no. It's like, with the one, they kissed each other. I'm like, yeah, but what do you mean they kissed each other? He's like, I don't know, man. And he's all blasted. I just thought it was funny because, like, really.
The guys in their house kiss each other all the time.
Yeah, they're like, guys, you're walking around naked.
My shoes.
Like the one guy, his dick was always out.
Yeah, I've never seen a picture of him with his dick in his pants.
You know, just carefree fun. I miss that. Like, I miss those guys so much. Like, they were in a spot in both our lives, together and also separate, that brought us out of our kind of our cage, you know, because, you know, and I always wish Big Kahuna would have got to meet them and hang out with them. Oh, you imagine Big Kahuna?
I think they, man, our college years would not have been the same if it wasn't for them. Because we were over at their place every weekend. And then we would go out to the bar. And then we'd go back to their place and keep the party going. I remember another thing they did. Do you remember White Ninjas? Two of them. So these guys, they got completely naked and covered their bodies with everything except like their eyes. So they basically covered their bodies with shaving cream. White, and so they looked like white ninjas, but they're just naked guys in shaving cream. And they made a video and they like took this out to the street and they had a ninja fight and nothing but shaving cream. And then they like went in to get cleaned off. And of course, the younger brother, Hufflepuff, they're followed them into the bathroom. And this is before smartphones. They like, this is just their video camera, followed them into the bathroom. They're in the shower, like getting showered off, and one of them's like shaving his nuts and filming the whole thing. Like, I don't know why the older brother's worried about a little kiss, whether it happened or not.
That's the irony of shit
happens in his own house. You know?
Yeah. Back to, I guess, anxiety is that.
So anyhow, that was a little bit of a tangent, but basically it's like you meet the right people, you have the right people in your life. They kind of bring you out of your social anxiety shell. And, you know, if you're in a safe space, it just makes it, you know, people are accepting of everyone. It makes you come out and be yourself and let your personality show, right?
I think you hit it on the nose that the point of like recovery, like say with anxiety and progressing, is finding that safe space. And this is what we're kind of talking about.
One little thing I wanted to like kind of, it just reminded me to piggyback on top of that. I think, you know, being in the relationship that I'm in, my wife, one thing I love about her, she's kind of made me just kind of accept who I am and kind of understand who I am. Cause you know, she really sees me and she knows that. I think I used to kind of mask and pretend I was more of an extrovert than I am, you know, but she realizes that I, you know, I get anxious about things and I do need my alone time and I do need my meditation, which is there's another good segue. We're going to talk about managing anxiety. For myself, meditation, the discovery of just chilling out, taking time to clear my brain. If I come home from work and I've just stressed out of my mind, and sometimes I need a gentle nudge from my wife just to be like, okay, I think you need to go upstairs and just unwind. But it's amazing. You know, like I'm not going and taking a nap, but I'm just letting things go, breathing, clearing my head, you know, just really trying to think about nothing. It's amazing how you can get yourself out of a spiral and you just feel your body feels lighter, you know, and you know, and if you practice something like that regularly, it can definitely prevent those meltdowns to the point where you get to a panic attack, you know, makes it way less likely.
Yeah. And then if you are having a panic attack, you can deal with it, you know, a little bit better, you know, because when you're in it, you're like, okay, this is going to subside. You won't, you know, necessarily get overwhelmed where like sometimes those panic attacks are tsunamis. And sometimes it's like, ah, it's just a maelstrom. So it's okay. We're fine.
Exactly.
If
that's actually a good analogy. First time in your fucking life.
You know, for management, I want to go back to what you're saying, like about talking about your wife. And where I'm going with this is that when you have, first and foremost, having the support system, part of your first line of defense is the support system, people that understand. Then also there is just get active. You know, they say for depression or all that, the first thing you can do is do some exercise. So get outside, go for a walk, get some fresh air into your lungs. If you live near, you know, by a lake, get out to a lake, get by a body of water and kind of just reset. And
sunshine, sunlight in your eyes, on your skin, makes you feel 100 times better.
And have someone also outside of your family, have someone you can talk to. If it's a best friend, a mate or whatever, find someone you can kind of open up with, because like one thing about family and sometimes friends, that they're biased, because a lot of times family, they understand, but then they're like, okay, when are you going to get better? So having someone that is a little bit of your rock doesn't hurt. But also I'd recommend when you have someone that is kind of like, you know, your go-to or your, you know, friend therapist, remember too, when you talk to them, it's not always about your problems, because even when you hang with them, tell them the good stuff that you're working on and just doing, that's healthy, where you're not just talking about yourself. I think that's one of the...
You want to be known as the negative Nelly, right?
Yeah, you don't want to...
Because I'm sure your friendship was built on positive experiences and aspects of your life, right? So yeah, keep in mind that person... Yeah, they're great to talk to and will always lend you an ear, but I mean, you got to bring something else, right? Also be a good listener.
I'm not obviously a therapist or a health professional, so I'm going to give a little bit of advice I'm going to throw out here, but take with a grain of salt. One thing is that part of recovery in this type of stuff or anything, realize, you know, have a little more self-awareness. You know, not everything's about you. You know what I mean? The world doesn't necessarily care about your issues, and that's not a bad thing. It's okay. Because part of it, I say that why I do so much better is I realize no one cares. Now, of course, people care, but I realize the grander thing out there is that nobody cares. You know, not every, you know, when you feel like you're ready to explode inside and lose it, a lot of people can't even see that, or they lack the awareness to, and even maybe the sensitivity. Don't take it personally. You know what I mean? It's okay that not everyone is going to be on board with you, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. When you haven't experienced it, like some people just don't understand it, right? You know, like you said, you've had conversations, we've had conversations, whereas you know, we've kind of had a shared experience in the, in, you know, respect of, you know, anxiety and panic and health issues, health anxiety. But when you talk to someone like your brother, who just doesn't overthink anything, just, you know, he just lives his life and he'll listen to you. But like you said, he just can't quite... You don't get that the same level of empathy and understanding, right? Because he hasn't experienced it. So he doesn't, it's hard for him to take your, put himself in your shoes.
It is. But on the other hand, why he's like that is not by accident, because he's had such close calls with brush with death at a young age that I think him struggling and with health earlier and not having that, he doesn't think of stuff like that because he's like, he knows. It's life is pretty, you know, fleeting. And so he just doesn't, he says it, he just doesn't like to waste his time on that stuff. But it doesn't mean, you know, people more like us, inverted like us, that it's a waste of time. It's just that you're very, we're very in tuned with our bodies, you know, and then you, it's a learned behavior. And this is where I would say for the management, one of the greatest things a person could do is be easy with yourself, be patient with yourself. Like if you're a person who's dealt with anxiety and a panic disorder for like 30 years, it's taking you 30 years to develop into that. It might take you another 30 years to actually change that. So be patient with yourself. Don't think of it like, don't think of your recovery is going to be like going to McDonald's and buying a Big Mac and you're good to go. No, no. You're going there for the quality. You're going for the high quality steak. You know what I mean? Treat it like that. Because I think...
Exactly like that.
No, but like...
What Raz
did. Look at it as, helping yourself. It's like you're making a gourmet meal. And it takes time and preparation.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's where I'm going.
It's not a quick fix. And
it's
not a quick fix. You mentioned this earlier, but what you said is like, you know, be accepting of who you are, because this is probably just going to be a part of you for the rest of your life. Live the best you can with the hand you're dealt, right? It's, you can't expect just to wake up as a different person. You just got to take the accommodations that you need and be patient with yourself, like you said.
But one thing I'll say is even finding the root cause necessarily does not fix the problem. It's you need to now be proactive. You always talk about self-advocacy. I think that's one of the most important thing a person can do is be your own advocate. I am struggling. What do I need to do to not struggle as much, or at least work around the struggle, even if I have to just maybe I can manage it? Well, there's lots of things you can do, and there's so many tools out there, but you have to be open yourself to want to actually go and find that and work at it.
Yeah, exactly. What I was going to also say is doing it a little check-in, you know, taking time to really realize how you're feeling and think about your needs. What do you need right now? You know, like have, you know, think about just even things like, have I eaten well enough? Like, have I eaten enough today? You know, it's been a while since I've actually gotten out and moved, you know, and maybe I need some movement, get the blood flowing. We need some exercise. That's one thing and it'll never change for me. I've always been active and I don't feel like I'm my best self if I haven't exercised in a while. Like I find that when you go on a trip and you're, you know, it's nice to be in different places, but if it's a trip where you're quite sedentary, like you come back and you kind of feel like garbage and you got to start moving again. Yeah, but I guess just kind of being aware of what you need, you know, and being realistic about that, right? And sometimes it's also saying no, right? And that might be something at work, you know, like if you have too much on your plate, be realistic. If you're at the point where you feel like you're overwhelmed already, boss asks you to take on another responsibility. Yeah, I was in a situation last year where there was something thrown on my plate and I was having enough, we had some personal stuff going on in our lives and I had to say no. At first I got the phone call and I was like, yeah, I guess I'll do it. But then I kind of realized I was at I kind of reached my limit of what I can handle and I did feel overwhelmed. So I just had to say no and explain it. And my boss is very understanding. So I think it's just the ability to accept your limits and really be in tune with your mental and physical being and realize what you're needing in any given moment.
Very well put. It also doesn't hurt finding some type of passion or hobby because that can really distract you from, you know, especially if you're worried about symptoms or whatever, but finding something that takes your mind and it's not, exercise is great, but it's exercise. You know, and you can go play a sport, but like even find like, you know, if you like painting or you like playing, you know, checkers or ping pong, podcasting, you know, doing something like this can be a great distraction. Here we are. We're talking about issues that millions of people are deal with every day. We're not the only ones that have went through this. There's probably going to be a great amount of you whoever listens to this.
I also got to say, like, this is just therapeutic, you know, because I get a chance to just chat with a very dear friend and collaborate and do something together. Like it's all consuming. Like I haven't really thought about anything else that's going on or stressing me out. And it's such a nice release and it's so different from what I do in my day to day. And also like, you know, my other hobbies, like playing music. So when me and my buddy end up playing a gig and you're out there and it's an adrenaline rush, you're just, all you're thinking about is the music and maybe not fucking up, but also trying to enjoy it at the same time. But like, it is such a release and you don't have time to think about anything else and just get lost in it. You need hobbies and releases like that.
I was going to say this a little bit earlier, but like, it doesn't hurt creating yourself a social network. Like it could be through podcasting, playing music and stuff, but having a little bit of a social network of people that you can check in with, do stuff with, especially different things, you know, like DB said that our history here, I get so giddy thinking about when we come in and we're going to record together. And it is kind of, even for you and I now, like we've always kind of kept in touch. But now, a lot of times, you know, we're a little more in touch because, you know, we're like bouncing ideas off of each other and exciting and like what things we should do and that. And that is very helpful for just for that, again, because stuff like that not only helps you individually and it can lessen, like, say, worries and all this stuff, but it's also could help with social anxiety because we're doing something that, you know, people could listen and could you know, critique and ridicule, but that's the fun of it. So you're putting yourself out there. So that's, again, is a way of building and structure and even therapy, if you want to look at it like that.
Fucking A, buddy.
But but this has been a really good conversation. And
I think we're going to outro here with one of my songs that I did with our band Broadway and Wallace. It's a little song called Outside, and it's, it was inspired and the whole song is kind of written about my experience of having a panic attack. I don't know if, and the interesting thing about the song is I don't think you would get that from it just listening to it, because it's not very literal the way I wrote it, but that's what it's about.
Yeah, and we'd recommend getting on and downloading Broadway and Wallace's the music.
Spotify. I think it's on everything. Mm. Well, it was a pleasure as always, Raz.
Same here, my friend.
We will be... No, we won't be seeing you soon.
we look forward to hear from you guys. We're going to be putting out some sociables here pretty soon. We're just in the process of getting things up and running. We're going to be on Spotify and a bunch of other platforms. We'll unveil that information as we go.
Sounds like a plan, bud.
All right. Keep your hanner in your banner.
Yes, sir. One drink and I'll be better. Nothing that you hope on empathy. Keep our eyes and lay it together. Had enough, but I'm the only person to play. Think it's time when you try and change your mind again. Fingers crumble when you try and hold on to the day.